mind-body entity theories and all of the research on placebos certainly speaks to the amount of control we do have.
I take it that you use this yourself.
Yes, all the time.
Ellen Langer, thank you so very, very much for being with us today.
My pleasure.
Ellen Langer is a professor of psychology at Harvard University. Well, it's really amazing the potential for fighting disease through our psychology.
Yeah, well, I have to say, you know, I have this mechanistic view of disease, and yet, you know, you wouldn't argue the fact that maybe your kidneys can affect your heart or vice versa. Well, it looks like your brain can affect things too.
Throughout the show, what we've learned is that there are all these different approaches to combating aging. I was trying to think of a good euphemism. Do you have one?
Aging? No. It's just maturation. I mean, it's good.
Okay. Maturation is a good euphemism. But from understanding how proteins work and then stop working to isolating these genes that could protect us against disease to understanding the role of psychology, we can at least say that the science of aging is still young.
Yeah, and full of promise. The trouble is, we should have reached this point 100 years ago. I would have felt much better about it had we done so.
So you're wishing that the science of aging was old?
Yes, because then we might know how to really stop it.
Well, thanks to the mature yet youthful talents that helped produce this show, Gary Niederhoff and Barbara Vance.
Also, thanks to financial support from Rena Shulsky David and Sammy David and the NASA Astrobiology Institute. Big Picture Science is produced at the SETI Institute, where scientists study the origin and nature of life. And a big thanks also to our listeners.
Your ears have been attuned to Raising the Minimum Age. And if you'd like to hear more Big Picture Science, you can find it on our archive on our website, BigPictureScience.org.
And if you're a podcast listener, but you prefer listening to over-the-air radio because it reminds you of your youth, check out the listing on our website of radio stations that carry the program. And if your local station's not on that list, well, consider letting them know you like the show. Oh, you have a comment, a criticism, maybe a suggestion, maybe some faint praise? Well, email it all to BigPictureScience@SETI.org.
Oh, and I also got a gene that lets you sit on the couch and eat donuts, all whiles your cholesterol goes down.
You are listening to WHFR Dearborn.
Welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal, except today is not Friday. Unbelievable. It's Tuesday. So if you're a regular listener to the station and you heard the theme song for our public affairs and information show about Dearborn and the surrounding area, you're probably thinking, well, what's happening here? Has something gone wrong? Well, yes, something did go wrong. Last Friday, we had a complete power outage at Henry Ford College. And so we didn't broadcast our regular journal show. And as our regular listeners on Friday may realize, I hope they have been realizing, over the last couple of months, we've been trying to include all the candidates for two different positions on the primary election ballot coming up just a week from today. So today is, if you're listening to the podcast, Tuesday, the 26th. Yes, it is Tuesday, the 26th of July. And so the election is August 2nd. It's just 1 week away. And we need to do what they call in the radio business a make good. We need to make up for, in fact, the fact we didn't have a show last Friday. And we had one of the six candidates who were on the ballot for the Democratic nomination to run in November for 15th District Michigan Representative. 15th District is actually not very gerrymandered. I think we're about the only district in Michigan that is really just one city. It's Dearborn. It just goes a little over in certain places to other nearby areas, but primarily I think something like 95% of the district is Dearborn. Amazing that we get our own contiguous district. And for some reason, the gerrymandering process didn't split us up into 14 little pieces or, you know, put us into other districts. Nonetheless, I have a special guest in the studio with us today, and she's going to be getting her 30-minute interview to explain all about her candidacy. And welcome to the studios, Roxanne McDonald.
Thank you so much.
Roxanne McDonald, people may know that you are associated with Henry Ford Community College and, of course, the Dearborn Board of Education, because the people elected to the Board of Education have to wear a second hat, if you will, a second major responsibility, and that's to help guide and minister through the elected, appointed people, of course, Henry Ford College, as well as the Dearborn Board of Education. So it's a big job. I often wonder if people running for the Board of Ed are directly aware of the fact that they have to do usually almost a second meeting every month in order to cover the issues that have to do with Henry Ford College. I'm sure you did, and you've been with us for 5 years now on our Board of Trustees, but also on the Dearborn Board of Ed. So let's get started with your interview. And the first category is your background. Please tell us about yourself, your education, employment, family, if you think that's relevant, go to it.
Okay. I graduated from Dearborn High more years ago than I'd like to remember, but I have been in Dearborn most of my life. And after graduating from Dearborn High, I started a family. I started one very young. I got married and I had my first son. And after that marriage, unfortunately, didn't work out. I realized that I am solely responsible for this human being, so I decided to go back to college, and that's when I went to what at the time was Henry Ford Community College.
Uh-huh.
I received two degrees, and I had never, like I said, I'd never planned on going to college, but I just got the bug, and I realized how important it was, and I was successful, and it gave me a lot of self-determination. So after graduating from Henry Ford, I went on to Lawrence Technological University and received a bachelor's degree in business administration. All the time that I was going to school, I was also working full-time. I worked at the Holiday Inn Fairlane for most of my career, and I started as line level and then went into management. So I have about 20 years of work experience, and that's not the only place I've worked. But after I remarried my second husband, and we've been together 30 years, I had decided that I'd like to have the opportunity to spend raising my children, because with the first one, I remember distinctly one time I was leaving for work, and he was about 3 at the time, and he said, "Mom, will you come back to my house and visit me soon again?" And it just broke my heart, you know. So when I had the opportunity to stay at home, my husband has a really good union job. He's in a union electrician and has been for many years. And we made some sacrifices, of course, but we made that decision for what we thought was the best for our family. And I think it's been beneficial. So I have that experience as well. And as my children grew, I decided to get involved. And first it was their PTA, and then I became PTA president after a while at their school, and then got involved on the district level with the PTA council, and spent 4 years on their elected board, and or appointed board. And then decided that I would try for running for office. And I was successful. It took me a couple of tries, but I was successful. And I've just gained so much knowledge and such an experience serving the community as on the Board of Education and again on the Board of Trustees. And like you said, a lot of people aren't aware of it, not only when they run for office for that position, but also the community. And it's a wonderful model. I believe we are the only one in the state and one of very few in the country that have such a model. And it's very beneficial to our students, because I believe it kind of makes education more seamless. We have the highest number of students that are in AP programs as well as dual enrolled programs, and we have early college programs that I think are the wave of the future. I think that it really helps in so many aspects. And we have been a P14 district, but now we're moving to be a P16 district with the addition of a baccalaureate degree here at Henry Ford College.
Mm-hmm. I remember a previous superintendent of public schools here in Dearborn before Brian Winston. He referred to us as, he often said, we don't need advanced placement programs in the high school. We have Henry Ford College. Well, it was community college then. But the point is that, well, they hadn't worked out, as Brian Winston did, relationships and the advanced degree, combining the last 2 years of high school with 2 years of Henry Ford College and making it into a three-year program so they can graduate in just 3 years, one more year than it would have taken them to finish high school. You have to qualify by various testing. You have to be ready for that because there's special responsibilities of getting to classes and doing more advanced work here, of course. But there's many opportunities for that. And yes, because it's the same district, it shouldn't be that difficult to work together between the superintendent's office and the president's office of Henry Ford College, because you've got the same board, trustee board, same people.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And it does make such a tremendous difference in what we're able to offer our students. We are expanding those programs, and I'd like to see that as a model for the state for sure. For example, we have the early college, Henry Ford Early College, which is devoted to the medical field. So students that know that they're interested in that field have a jump on everyone else. They can get trained in that field. They can learn whether it's respiratory tech or EMS or whatever interests them. And again, at the end of one extra year after high school, they have their high school diploma, they have a degree, and in many cases, they're certified in a field. We also have, for general studies, the Henry Ford Collegiate Academy, which all students have the opportunity to be involved in. But like you said, they do have to pass certain parameters and targets on test, which will get them into the program. But that's for students that might not necessarily know the direction that they want to go, but still have the opportunity to have the five-year program. That's 4 years of high school and then one additional year. And this helps in so many ways. Not only does it give our students a competitive edge, it reduces the cost of higher education on families. The burden is lifted because the only cost to the family of that associate's degree is transportation for the student. Everything else, fees, books, everything is included. So that is just something incredible that we're able to offer.
Sure, sure. Well, let's jump on in our outline here of topics. Obviously, you've had some political experience because, as you said, you had to run a couple times before you were elected in the Board of Education. That's the cruel fact of politics is, well, a lot of times it's name recognition. And, of course, in the Parent Teacher Association.
Yes.
Yeah, you obviously were known in that context, but the wider scope of the voters in Dearborn got to know you more through those other campaigns. I can't remember how many times he ran for office and lost. Abraham Lincoln, I'm thinking of. And when he finally won, it was our president of the United States, you know. So.
Well, I won twice. The first time I was no one had heard of me except for my small group that were involved in the PTA, but I made a really good showing. The second time was a head-to-head match against Jim Schoolmaster, and he and I are good friends. But with the last name Schoolmaster, that right there is a little bit of a detriment. But I only lost that election by 21 votes. Mm-hmm. So that was, you know, that was huge. And
we always say here, every vote matters.
Absolutely.
Because it's especially local elections and this primary too. Mm-hmm. There won't be that many people voting. There should be more. There should be more people registered in the first place. But since there isn't, someone that says, I think I'll just do something else today. I'm not going to be bothered by, well, my goodness, then the candidate you favored, you know, you would have voted for if you went to the they could lose
right. Just
by that one vote.
Absolutely.
Every local election, when we do our election summary on our regular Friday version of the WHFR Journal, we talk about the close races, and there's always a race that's so close, 5 or 10 votes. Maybe it's a proposal, a ballot proposal, but often it's a race for some office. Just a couple votes make a big difference. So everybody really needs to find out as much as they can. So thank you for being with us today. And just for our listeners, a recap, we're talking to Roxanne McDonald. She is a candidate for on the Democratic primary. If you're going to be voting on the Democratic side of the primary coming up on August 2nd. She's running for 15th District Representative, the position currently held by George DeRaney. Why did you choose to be a member of the of the Democratic Party?
Well, I come from a long line of Republicans. And
well, then it's a double question.
Absolutely.
Why now?
Well, I have just found my way all along, and I knew that I didn't really believe in a lot of the things that they believe in. I absolutely respect their opinion, and I understand where they're coming from. I understand their principles, but it just doesn't feel right to me. So then I realized that I lean more Democrat. My husband is a union electrician, as I said, and so I understand what the working families face. I really understand the difficulties that they have. And I believe that in order to make our economy grow, because we are a consumer-driven economy, at least in my opinion, that the way to do that is to lift up the middle class and give them more money to disposable income that they can spend, and that helps grow the economy. Those are some of the views, but I also believe that people have the right to love who they love and to marry who they want to marry, and I just have the principles.
I certainly would think that a lot of people might be reconsidering their decisions on which party they're a member of, because both parties have changed in Absolutely. The last, say, 10 years. Even the people that might have been big supporters of George W. Bush may not be a supporter of their current presidential nominee. And the whole Tea Party movement, which is really sort of a ragtag, I find it a reactionary wing of the Republican Party. Nonetheless, I mean, if you want to believe those things, fine, but it's not very consistent. But, you know, a lot of things have happened in Lansing because they've had not only Republican majorities in the House and Senate, but also the Tea Party people within the Republican Party have held sway. They've been sometimes the extra votes that would help the Republicans pass something. So the Republicans, the other Republicans, let's call them more moderate Republicans, would find difficulty passing anything if it wasn't in line with what the Tea Party people would want to vote for. And they're very strict about that. They're not willing to compromise, as I see it. And they're certainly welcome to that position if they can continue to get reelected with that. But I'm just saying that that's why the question comes up, is because I think the political affiliations are much much different than they used to be. I didn't do my caveat at the beginning of the show. All opinions expressed in the show are not necessarily those of Henry Ford College, but they are the opinions of one of our Board of Trustees members, but that's separate.
Absolutely. I'm speaking for myself this capacity.
And for those of you who think, oh, well, you're doing like a special political commercial, even though you're not allowed to do that for Roxanne McDonald. No, because we made a big effort to get in touch with all the candidates, Democrat and Republican. And we failed in a couple of cases to get in touch with two of the three Republicans. One of the Democrats was scheduled to be on the show for the 15th District Rep and has somehow disappeared, didn't show up, can't get in touch again. Another person that I mentioned, I found out legal in voters, Alex Shamey, has suspended his campaign. In other words, if elected, he won't serve. So it's because he has health issues. That was communicated to me at League of Women Voters Forum. And so he officially is not running. And his name was in some elections here in Dearborn. At least he ran for two other offices in Dearborn, didn't win those. But I'm just saying, if you wanted to know, that his candidacy is done. And Jackie Zidane, who is also another candidate, that we couldn't get in touch with her. And I say we, I mean me. Okay, I did find a sort of a street address, but I guess I'm a little shy. I didn't want to go knock on her door. And she admitted to me at the League of Women Voters Forum, and we'll tell our listeners later in the hour about how they can catch that again. It's a great chance for, Roxanne McDonald and the others who have active campaigns, including Jackie Zidane, for you to listen to all of them, although much more briefly than this. But she admitted that her website went up very late. And I communicated through that website to her, as I told her, and got an automated response. We'll get right back to you. And then no one got back to me. And then the time just filled up. You know, there's only so many Fridays. Well, in this case, I squeezed in a Tuesday. I had to bump another student pre-recorded show. I'm sorry, Betty. Anyway, we'll run it in August, however, folks. That's the joy of pre-recorded shows. They'll come back at you again. Those three candidates, we tried. We just couldn't. So we're not picking favorites here, folks. We're giving everybody 30 minutes. So back to Roxanne McDonald today. Oh, and the two Republicans, Guerin and Johnson, couldn't find any way to contact them, website or whatever. I'm sorry. Only Paul Sophia, and that is the correct pronunciation of his last name, was able to be on the show. And after this interview, I'll go down the dates. You can go back and listen to the podcast for all these interviews, including this one, if you want to listen to it again, from WHFR.fm. Okay, back to Roxanne McDonald. So, I just kind of crazy little question. Do you have any political heroes? People who's, I know John F. Kennedy was one of my heroes, and he wrote a book called Profiles in Courage about political heroes of his that were extremely courageous in the history of America. And it was quite a revealing, about 10 or 12 little mini biographies that he put together in that book. So anyone who you greatly admire or respect within the political system?
I have some historical ones, and John F. Kennedy is one of mine as well. But if you go recent, I have to say Joe Biden. I just really appreciate the fact that he is kind of the everyday man. And if you know anything about his background story, it is amazing. It's moving. He took office and was sworn in originally in the early 70s at the bedside of his son, he had lost his wife and his young daughter in a car accident. And he said that he was going to take the oath of office, but first and foremost, he was a father. Because the people could get another senator, but his children couldn't get another father. So, and then the story with his son, Beau, and how he recently passed, it's just amazing. And I have a great deal of respect for him. And I once heard him give a speech. My son is a disabled vet, so vet's issues are very close to my heart. And I once heard him give a speech to Gold Star families, which are families who have lost a member in the service of our country. And he said, and I know this came from his heart and from experience, that the time will come that you will think of your loved one and a smile will come to your face before a tear comes to your eye. And that just moved me. And just I followed him for a long time. And honestly, I wish and I understand the circumstances at the time with the passing of his son. He said, if I can't give 100%, I won't do it. But I would have loved to have seen him run for president.
Yes, I understand. Well, yes, he has a lot of sympathy with a lot of people and an amazing career. Yeah, public service. Okay, let's get into some issues. I tossed a whole bunch out here. Education and the whole infrastructure issue, that is our roads and sewers and so on. Everything needs a lot of fixing in this state. The roads, the funding even currently is not
inadequate.
Inadequate by any means. In fact, it hasn't officially kicked in, even the money that's inadequate.
Right.
Alternative energy, energy for the future issues.
Well, I'd like to start, if
so
you
go
don't
ahead.
Mind.
Yes, now she's, Roxanne has the list in front of her there, so go ahead.
I'd like to start with education and go back to that just a little bit. There's a few other things that I want to add because that's my passion and that's where I've spent my time. But we have to stabilize funding for education. What we're doing now is just, it's not working, and there's got to be a better way to make sure that the money is there for our students, because our students are our future, and I believe an educated workforce is what will advance our society. There's a couple of things that I want to add, too, as far as not every student, I believe, college is the right fit for them. So I think it's important that we give them opportunities in, like, the career tech and in the skilled trades. My youngest son, I have three boys. My youngest son is in high school right now. He's a senior this year. And last year he was able to get trained in welding. He spent a whole year in his high school at Edsel Ford learning welding, and he loves it. Mm. And he's a creative guy, and I know sitting behind a desk would never suit him. So this year in college or in high school, he will have a chance to continue welding. So he's not part of any of the academy programs or the five-year programs, but he will have 2 years of good welding experience when he graduates, which will certainly give him a leg up if that's the field which he chooses. And I believe it is, because he's passionate about that and being creative. So.
Okay. Well, it obviously, I'm so biased myself, of course, being a teacher for 48 years now. Oh, my goodness. And all here at Henry Ford College, except for some part-time work around the area before that. But something has to be done, and it's got to be stable, because one of the biggest problems you notice directly at the board meetings and even the trustee meetings is the funding level from the state keeps changing every year.
Absolutely.
We always hope it could at least keep up with inflation.
And it doesn't.
But there were big cuts, and it's totally true. Just because the economy might be failing, like it did in 2008 nationally, even much less Michigan, that's the time you need education even more.
Absolutely.
I mean, to keep it going on a steady keel, so that people can work and think their way out of the problems. Mm-hmm. You know, we can't have that disrupted. I know even in the city of Dearborn, Mayor O'Reilly, when he was on the show in April, he talked too, for the first time for him to talk about finding alternative, more stable sources for funding the city.
Absolutely. Revenue sharing is very low, and we have to, because we have to provide services for our communities and our people that live mm-hmm. there. And so that's an issue.
So you see, you'd like to see at least a promise of I don't know, stable funding, like keeping up with inflation by one criteria or another from the legislature or the next governor, whoever
Without
that might
question.
Be.
Yeah. Because right now it's just you never know what you're going to have, and a lot of times it's a shell game. They say they fund education because they give you some money in this hand, but then they take some away in the other hand. So mm-hmm. One thing I want to jump back to, because you had mentioned briefly about being in the minority party and how I would handle that, but I didn't get a chance to respond. I just
that's that's assuming the Democrats don't win enough seats in November to become the majority party in the House, where you would be elected to, if you were elected, or the Senate. But it's really difficult for George Doreney, I know, right now, because he proposed a lot of bills, and in some cases, since the Republicans in the majority also control all the committees, that's where the bills have to start. If I remember my rock and roll thing from the TV show from 30 years
Schoolhouse
ago.
Schoolhouse Rock.
That's it, Schoolhouse Rock. That's how you learn about civics these days. I hope it's still on. It's probably not on anymore.
You can catch
anyway,
it.
Yeah. Anyway, the point is that he didn't even get a hearing
right.
from the committee. They wouldn't even discuss it. You know, normally they would accept it, and the committee would research it and discuss it among their members, and then vote it up or down to go to the House floor for a vote after they worked a bill out there. But most of the time, he said he'd introduce it in the committee, and they wouldn't even accept it for discussion.
Right.
And I know a lot of Democrats are upset by that. For example, the Detroit funding proposal that passed to help pay some of the debt, if not all of it, for the Detroit schools to keep them going. There wasn't even a representative from Detroit, either the present school board or the mayor or some of the elected political representatives, senators, representatives. No one was even part of the discussion about putting that package together
right.
from Detroit, which means that Detroiters didn't have any elected representative who could give any input about what was good or bad about it, and a lot of them found a lot of failings in that proposal.
Well, one thing I think that we need to do is build relationships, and that's what I would like to do, because that's the way you get things done, and you can't achieve great things if you demonize the people that you have to work with. So I can't say that one person could make a difference, but I'd certainly like the opportunity to try to just change the climate. I believe in civility and respect of other people. And I think if you can work on that level, then you can create a dialogue and you can have a discussion. And when you do that, then you can tackle a problem instead of just saying, you know, I'm not going to work with them, or, like I said, demonizing the other party. You'll never get anywhere when you do that.
Of course, because of term limits, in this situation in particular, with George Durenning leaving, everybody going in will be a newbie in 15th District Rep, and it'll take a while to get that relationship. I mean, to get the other people who are already there to know you and to respect you, and to therefore, once they do that, then they can listen to you, I think, effectively.
Absolutely.
So it's going to take some time.
I have one solution to that, too, is I think often candidates that get elected, they want to bring in someone that worked on their campaign with them as a staffer. And I have a couple people in mind that I know have worked in this district. They've worked with George, and I've built a relationship with them over many years. And they have the education and the knowledge of how the system works. And I think that would be a tremendous asset to me, because I have somebody that I can lean on. And also George Durenning, he's been a tremendous mentor for me for many years, and he has the experience. So, you know, when I have some concerns or issues, or I'm not sure how to go about tackling something, I do have some people that I could rely on for their expertise.
Okay. And also, as a new member, how would you stand up to the Democratic Party if they told you to vote a certain way, and or a lobbyist said vote a certain way, and let's say threatened not to support you with money for your next campaign? How would you handle that?
Well, in my core, if I believe that I shouldn't vote on something or should vote on something, and it's contrary to what someone else is proposing, I like to believe, and I think I have the integrity to say that I could stand up for what I believe in. And I have enough people that do support me that I think I could find some other funding methods. But it's tough. I know it's tough, and there's a lot of pressure.
Just a lot of people giving you $27 each.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Go Bernie.
It adds up. It adds
it
up, you know.
And that's what my campaign has been mostly. You know, I've received a few small or a few larger contributors or contributions from groups. But on the majority, it's been $50 here and $100 there from people who believe in me. And some of them, and this always makes my day, I'll get a check from someone I don't even know, but they've, you know, done a little research, or they've seen me at meetings or whatever, and they have faith that I would do a good job. And so that's always uplifting.
The biggest ticket item in a campaign locally and for the 15th district is just the mailings, I assume, to the households in Dearborn.
Absolutely.
At 20,000-30,000. If you do a mailing to every household, some people with limited funds, I know, maybe they just go with the east side or the west side of town or the south side or whatever, well, wherever they think they can get the greatest advantage from. And that's tough, because I'd like to send, you know, a mailing to everyone, but
of course it
costs so much money.
And you don't want anyone to think that you're neglecting them. But at the same token, you have to, just like when you're serving on the board or working with budgets, you have to set priorities and know where you're going to be most effective. And of course, my budget is very limited. I've raised a fair amount of money, but and I have some issues when huge money gets into politics on any level, especially on local levels, because I just don't think it belongs there, and it shuts out a lot of really good possible candidates. Because if you have to raise, say, $100,000 for a local city election, for just say city council, for example, then that's going to cut out a lot of people that may have brilliant ideas and may really have worked for this community, but just know that they can't ever get there.
Term limits. Obviously, if it wasn't for term limits, maybe this option or this chance for you to be elected as a representative wouldn't happen, because George Durenning might just choose to continue again, and maybe he would be reelected. Are you for term limits or against them in terms of state government?
I am against them, because I do believe that they really they stifle our opportunities to really get a lot of things done, because someone will only look to, well, I'm only going to be in this position for 6 years, like the road funding you talked about. So if I can get myself covered for the next 6 years, it's going to be somebody else's issue when they come on. And so we had an inadequate road funding bill that passed that doesn't even go into effect, fully fund what we need just to make up for our neglect for until 2021. And that doesn't include inflation. And they talked about having revenue sources that may or may not be there. That was before the Flint crisis. There's a lot of issues there.
What about taxation issues? There's so many. And we talked about there's many different ways to do that. Does the state need to generate more money through one kind of tax or another, do you think?
I think there's ways to generate revenue without taxing. We've talked just briefly about, well, not in this program, but about marijuana. And I think that that could possibly be, with a lot of regulations and for adult use only, like alcohol, that could generate some of the revenue that we need without taxing people. I think that it's a travesty that the pensions have been taxed. These are people that really, really relied on that money, and it was supposed to be there for them. I don't like the shift of the tax shift that's been put on working families. And there's a lot of issues with that. One of the questions here is alternative energy. I wouldn't mind touching on that for
a
moment.
Yes, go ahead.
Too.
Yes.
I think that we really have to find a way to move towards wind and solar and other alternative issues. I think it's the best for our environment. I think it adds safety to our community. And it would stimulate the economy, too. If, for example, there's 8,000 component parts in a windmill. Mm-hmm. We are a manufacturing state. If we could manufacture those 8,000 parts, that creates good-paying jobs. That gets us off of coal and other dirty energies. And for, as a matter of fact, right now, we're still importing dirty coal and expensive coal. So I think moving towards sustainable energies is the way to go. And there's a lot of jobs that can be created, and it would certainly assist in clean air and clean water and other things for our environment.
Yeah, well, I hope so. Obviously, there's all kinds of good reasons to switch from gas and coal and even nuclear. I mean, just certainly the Pure Michigan campaign, which they're still putting money into, it is kind of tainted. That campaign is tainted, just like Flint's water supply is tainted. That's a whole national debacle for the state. What are your priorities for clean water, air, and food?
Well, I think, like,
it should be obvious. It should
absolutely
be obvious, but it's not, you know.
Well, you have to put the needs of people first, and that was one of the things that the Flint crisis, when they're so concerned about the bottom line, you forget the needs of the people. And we have the right to clean air and clean water. And one thing that concerns me, too, is Enright is a company, it's a Canadian company, and they have pipelines that are antiquated, and they're running underneath the Great Lakes. That could create a huge natural disaster for us, and Enright has not had the best reputation in historically.
Because of the Kalamazoo crisis a couple of years ago, which they, I just reported that they did settle with the city of Kalamazoo for $171 million, but still
The damage is done.
The damage is done already to their water supply. And I have an actual press release from Sierra Club I'm going to feature in the last part of the show. We have about 5 minutes left for your interview. So I think we can move on to endorsements and then more information about you and your campaign, how people can get in touch.
Sure. I have several endorsements. The first one I'd like to say is George Duraney has endorsed me, and he is the current, as you said, the current holder of this seat. And I think that speaks volumes because he knows what it takes to do the job, and he has the confidence in me that I'm capable of doing it. And he hasn't just given me his verbal endorsement. He's walked doors with me, and he's helped me in so many other ways. So I thank him so much for that, and I appreciate his endorsement. And again, I think it really says a lot. I've also been endorsed by the Greater Detroit Building and Construction Trades Council, which represents more than 20 local unions and 35,000 members. Hmm. Plumbers and Pipe Fitters, Local 671. Sheet Metal Workers, Local 80 and 292. The School Administrators PAC. Sean Green, who is the current commander of the Dearborn Allied War Veterans Council, has endorsed me as well. There's a Democratic Women's Legislative Caucus group that consists of current legislators, and they have endorsed me. And they're called My Women Win. So I have a wide variety of endorsements. I would like to get a teacher's endorsement, and I have previously, but I don't think they will before the primary. Mm. So that's one that I would certainly appreciate, and I would go for.
Yeah, a lot of teachers are on break right now, but
I commend them for the work they do, because they basically train everybody that has any job in this society. So
as a member of now the adjunct faculty union here at the college, but for many years the Local 1650 full-time teachers professors union here at Henry Ford College, these unions in Dearborn are really doing their part, and they try to be collaborative with the administrators and the board. Sometimes there's issues that come up, and they've got to take stands for what they see. But I think the board and in general has great respect for these representatives, because I think they engender it. I think they act pretty responsibly, but sometimes they have to stand up and speak. I've told this many times in my story on the show, but before there was state or federal accountability for goals for teaching and outcomes, Henry Ford College, Local 1650, we came up with the plan ourselves and introduced it to the administration, and even negotiated it so it would be in place. We had to put it in our contract.
Right.
Of course, we were in charge of it too, but finally now, because of other accountability issues, the administration has taken it over. But we did that years before it was acquired by the accreditation agency and so on, and just because it was the right thing to do. It was initiatives that really had to happen, and nobody was forcing it, but just because the union was doing it. And even our union, I remember, and I think they're still doing it, I think it's still in our contract, is that for insurance cost, health care, dental, we negotiate for a set amount of money each time, and then we take control of it and decide which company we're going to go with. So we actually let the companies compete to give us the best deal. And for years, I think we even had a better health care coverage than the K-12 teachers union did, just because we had that option.
Right.
And because we had committees working on that, making phone calls and getting quotes for the whole period during some other contract, so that we would be ready to go with it. So I'm just saying, very innovative, but that's what you want. You want collaborative, responsible people on all sides.
Absolutely. And you don't always have to agree, but you can always come to some kind of consensus that works for people if you're willing to work together.
If somebody's been watching the clock, we're a few minutes over the 30 minutes, but I've been grandstanding here, folks, because it's Tuesday. And I'm all revved up. On Friday, end of the week, I'm kind of tired, and I don't talk so much. So I'm trying to get Roxanne's time in full. But we're coming to the last issue. So you have a website where people can get information about your campaign. Go ahead.
It's called Roxanne Rocks 2016, and that's my name, Roxanne, Roxanne, Rocks, Rocks, 2016, and that's .wix.com/Michigan. I also have a Gmail account that if anyone would like to contact me directly, it's RoxRocks2016, that's Roxrocks2016 at Gmail. And I have a Facebook page, which I'd love everyone to go visit. It's www.facebook.com/RoxanneForMichigan, and that's the word F-O-R, not the letter. The number.
Mm-hmm. And I will give more information about that League of Women Voters debate in the last portion of this hour of a special edition of the WHFR Journal interview today with Roxanne McDonald. Finally, you have 1 minute a big 60 seconds summation to present your case on why voters should vote for you in the Democratic primary on August 2nd for 15th District Rep.
Well, I have to say, I think that I certainly have the most experience, and I'm not just talking about my experience as an elected official. I'm talking about the wisdom that I've learned from my life experiences. I'm older than most of the other candidates, and I've raised a family. I've been in the workforce for 20 years. I have so much invested in this community. I've served on several boards. I've served on the Dearborn Goodfellows Board of Directors, the Henry Ford College Foundation Board of Directors, the Wayne County Association of School Board Board of Directors. I still serve on that. Michigan Military Moms. I'm a member of the American Legion Auxiliary. So my roots in Dearborn, although I wasn't born here, they run deep, and I invested in all areas of this community, and I understand this community. And again, my wisdom and my experience, I think, by far make me the best candidate.
Okay, and Roxanne McDonald is out there, like many candidates are, in this last week, going door to door, even in the hot, humid weather that we've been having here in Dearborn. So greet them, whoever they are, greet them well, and you know, and talk to them if you can for a few minutes. They have to go to the next house too, but ask the big questions that are of concern to you about the Michigan legislature, what's going on in Lansing, some of their background. Just encourage you to treat them well. Maybe give them a drink of water or something, too.
I have
too.
Had several people that offered me a bottle of water, and I say those small acts of kindness certainly mean a lot.
Of course, of course. But good luck with the campaign and getting your message out, and I hope to see you around either the college or from the House of Representatives in the future.
You certainly will.
Okay. Thanks very much for being on the Journal today.
Thank you for the time.
Okay. We'll be back with more special information about Dearborn and the surrounding area right after Jim Hightower.
Two hot, muggy days in Orlando, Florida, wrangling over policy issues as one of the members of the Democratic Party's National Platform Committee. And I had my horse ready, for I was speaking some truth the party establishment did not want to hear. About 40% of the committee members, including me, were Bernie Sanders representatives, and we intended to do our best to Bernieize the platform with progressive amendments so it could contain more than the same old business-as-usual blah-blah that these documents usually contain. A priority target was the Trans-Pacific Partnership scam. That's a job-destroying, anti-democracy little shop of corporate horrors. Astonishingly, the draft platform presented to us essentially endorsed this monstrous power grab by multinational corporations. So I was designated to present, on behalf of Team Bernie, an amendment to flat-out kill TPP, which I gladly did, telling the full committee that our amendment was, quote, a form of political Viagra to stiffen the spine of our party. Inexplicably, however, the White House is pushing TPP, so it went all out to stop us, even using parliamentary manipulations to try keeping me from presenting the amendment. But Sanders' savvy policy staff outflanked them, forcing a debate and a vote, all in front of C-SPAN's national television audience. Still, establishment Democrats tightly controlled 60% of the committee, so we lost the vote. Nonetheless, against all odds, the Sanders insurgency advanced the progressive cause by compelling the establishment to strengthen their own pusillanimous language and by dragging the TPP skunk into public view. This is Jim Hightower saying, sometimes taking an insistent stand on principle can create a strategic win from an apparent loss.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
What if a political party's platform actually stood for workaday people, rather than being a catalog of far-out right-wing nuttiness or a batch of nothingness meant to preserve business as usual? Lo and behold, this year's Democratic Party platform. It's not perfect, of course, but thanks to Bernie Sanders' revolutionary presidential campaign, this platform is actually rich in populist policies for the people. It puts Democrats on record for such overdue national needs as a nationwide jobs initiative to hire millions of Americans to rebuild and expand our crumbling infrastructure, a $15 national minimum wage, breaking up too big to fail Wall Street banks, making public colleges tuition-free for working-class families, expanding Social Security, making it harder for CEOs to block workers from joining unions, reestablishing postal banks in our public post offices to give low-income families affordable access to banking, encouraging renewable energies to replace Big Oil's destructive fracking process, expanding community health centers to reach 25 million more uninsured families, requiring Medicare to negotiate with Big Pharma to lower our drug prices, and encouraging states to provide universal health care, decriminalizing marijuana, eliminating for-profit prisons and detention centers, and abolishing the death penalty. And what about eliminating super PACs, providing financing of elections and automatic voter registration, and making Election Day a national holiday? This is Jim Hightower saying, none of these things is a done deal, but at least one party is committing to an agenda that grassroots progressives can organize around. After all, change always comes from the bottom up. So, let's get moving.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at hightowerlowdown.org.
This is Jay Koronik speaking, and this is the new WHFR Journal special Tuesday edition. I think it's the first time ever we did a show on Tuesday, and of course, it's because there was no power at Henry Ford College last Friday, so we couldn't use the studios, couldn't broadcast, the transmitter was off. So we missed one of our political interviews that we promised that we had scheduled. And so we just got done doing that interview earlier on this hour with Roxanne McDonald. Let me just review for those of you who might just only be Tuesday Forum listeners. Say, oh, I didn't know there was a show on Fridays that did Dearborn news and information. Yes, 1 to 2 o'clock. And on our website, whfr.fm, click on talk shows, and then you can get to choose either the Tuesday Forum or the WHFR Journal show, which is on the Fridays. And of course, this show will be saved on Tuesdays. Just so you realize, May 27th on the Journal, we interviewed Gene Hunt for 19th District Judge. One of the other candidates, Abby Bozzi, June 24th. Okay. Got to know the dates when you go to the podcast. And July 29th, that is this Friday's show, we're going to have Susan DeBaggia, the current president of Dearborn City Council, but she's running for 19th District Judge also. So we'll have all those candidates. You only can pick one out of the three. It's a nonpartisan ballot, so don't worry about Democrat or Republican. You have to choose the best one there. And then the top two vote-getters will go on to November. So you see the top two names again in November, and you get to choose which one of those. But in terms of 15th District, representative to Lansing, Republican Paul Safaya was June 17th on the Journal. July 15th, Brian Stone we interviewed. And July 26th, today, Roxanne McDonald. And this Friday, we complete the interviews of those we were able to get in touch with and schedule and wish to show up. Abdullah Hamoud will also be on this Friday's Journal show, 30 minutes for Abdullah Hamoud and 30 minutes for Susan DeBaggia, two different offices that they're running for, of course. So shouldn't be any collision there. No connection between the two, of course. So going on with just a few other details here in the time remaining on this Tuesday special edition of the new WHFR Journal. By the way, we are the station making waves, WHFR.fm. League of Women Voters candidate forum that took place, and it was fantastic a couple weeks ago, 3 hours long, but they edited it down, I bet, a little bit shorter than that, took out some of the breaks because they talked about the ballot proposals that will be on the ballot in Dearborn, and a couple are Wayne County, but one is the city of Dearborn, millage renewal, a special supplemental millage that we passed in 2011 is expiring. this year, and it's about $12 million a year and that the city will be out, and sacrifices will have to be made if it doesn't get passed. But that's a big issue, and it's just sort of right there in that little primary election. So that's one reason you want to vote. So anyway, the forum talks about that, and the forum talks talked to all the candidates who showed up for the 15th District Representative position, Democrats, and that one Republican. And also the 19th District Court candidates, all three. Of course, it'll run on CDTV if you have WOW or AT&T Uverse or Comcast. Let's see, Channel 12 Comcast, Channel 10 WOW, Channel 99 AT&T Uverse. Also, if you just rather go to cityofdearborn.org, because if you look on those channels, you have to, it has to be the right day and time. And they're running in a particular schedule that is too confusing for me to mention over the radio. I mean, it's too many different dates and too many different times. But they are going to be running on that channel. Good luck in catching them. I can tell you that the times, let's see, either 3 p.m., 7 p.m., or 8 p.m., but not every day. So good luck in finding it. And it's not, well, it's just, you know, tough. Anyway, so I would just go and get to a computer that has audio video playback, of course, connected. cityofdearborn.org. And it is a sort of so-called on-demand. It's a video podcast that you can watch of the League Forum event, which I think will probably run in its edited form about 2 hours or so. But that will give you at least 10 minutes or so looking at each candidate for each office. Better than nothing. Of course, 30 minutes on a WHFR interview is pretty good, too, I think. Anyway. Try to catch that. League of Women Voters always doing a great job for the community, getting that information out. After the Republican convention was over last week, there were statements by, of course, Democrats like Gary Peters, Republican, Senator, Democrat, Michigan, and U.S. Representative Debbie Dingell made statements voicing support for their Arab and Muslim constituents. Since most of the Republican speakers were hyping fear of all Muslims, really, at the convention in Cleveland. And you might say, well, it was just sort of indirect. It was mainly those Muslims coming from those terrible countries or those radical jihadist Muslims or whatever. Well, however you saw it, it seemed indirectly, in general, to be indicting all Muslims. That was my opinion. It's my opinion, and I'm sticking to it. But of course, that may not be the opinion of other people and anyone here at Henry Ford College. Nonetheless, that story got in the Arab American News this last week. Let's see here. This may or may not come up Friday, but both Susan DiBaggio and Gene Hunt, running for the 19th District Court Judge position, have responded with letters that they mailed out indicating that, number one, neither one had been involved with any sort of robocalls. That's where they get a computer pre-programmed with a message, and it starts calling identified numbers in a certain area says political messages, usually anonymously. In other words, it doesn't say who created the message or who they're in support of as a candidate. They say usually something very negative about one candidate or the other. And apparently there was a robocall that went out, at least one anyway, that seemed to try to put Susan DiBaggio, Abdullah Hamoud, and Fadwa Hamoud from the Dearborn Board of Education, also Henry Ford College trustees, in the same category as if it was a family takeover. And as we said on the show a week ago Friday, it's a common name, like Smith or Jones or whatever the common name is in America these days. And so Hamoud is, there's no connection between them other than the same last name, and no direct familial connection. So you can't say there's a conspiracy there, folks, because there's actually no family connection. And Susan DiBaggio did send out a very long letter trying to set the record straight. And I assume you received that in your mail in Dearborn here. We wouldn't have the time to read all of that, but you have to respond, just like some people blamed it on Gene Hunt. So he had to respond, you know, certainly. He had nothing to do with it. Would never do something like that, would never authorize that. So however that little negative campaigning came up, that was a story also in the Arab American News from the 14th of July, which somehow I missed. Does happen that I miss stories, folks. Sorry about that. But I knew the rumors, and I got the letters from DiBaggio and Hunt with that issue. So let's see here. Only 1 minute to go. Okay. This is brand new. Mention this to you. In November, of course, there's plenty of reasons to go vote in November. I mean, it is a presidential election time, but there's a lot more people that will be taking office also, depending on who wins there. But there's now another, in this area, school funding proposal on November ballot, not for Dearborn, but for the Wayne County Regional Educational Service Agency, or is that RESA? Nickname RESA, Wayne RESA, okay? And they just passed a motion to place an enhancement millage, that would be an additional millage, on the November ballot. And the millage would provide districts in the area with an additional $385 per student for the next 6 years. We have to find out more. That averages for if your house is worth $100,000, then it'd be about an additional $8 per month, or about $100 a year, if the Wayne RESA enhancement millage, as they're calling it, passes. We'll give you more information before November. You'll receive more in the mail about it, because maybe you think, you know, Wayne RESA does help the individual school districts, as well as having programs of their own. So that's another decision we'll have to make, and we'll give you more information about that. Tune in this Friday for DiBaggio and Hamoud, no relation, and we'll be back with the Journal then. Thank you for listening today. Stay tuned for The Malt Shop with Daddy G. Jay Kornick saying take care and be careful out there. Let's see. Okay. Here's an end theme. Don't usually use one, but running into the malt shop. Let's do Dancing in the Street. WHFR, Dearborn.
Just a little girl, I asked my mother, what will I be? Will I be pretty? Will I be rich? Here's what she said to me. Que sera,